tweet at Miriam O'Call.
Now, Stockton's winger-in-chief, Mike Hanrahan, he's a singer, a performer, but in recent years, he's added a new string to his bow. He's an advocate, an activist, and a researcher into the subject of dementia. Like many things in life, it's all down to his mother. Mike, morning to you.
Good morning, Miriam. Delighted to be here. Yeah, it was all down to my mum. My mum had an age-related dementia, so it was not as severe as a lot of dementias are. She had it for quite a few years, so we were living with her as carers, as family carers. In the beginning, we knew very little about it as a family, but we were a strong unit at the time as a family, and our roles changed in life. Mum had looked after us so well all her life that we decided it was time for us to kind of look after her. But we knew very little about. I certainly knew nothing. We got an indication it was Alzheimer's, but as I've since known now, Alzheimer's is just one aspect of dementia. So it was a learning process that we weren't prepared for, but we all dug in and did our bit, and then it got me interested in the whole area of dementia because I needed to understand more.
Mm. So tell me all about the Hanrahan family, including your mom and your dad. Where did you grow up and how many of you were there?
We grew up in Ennis in County Clare in St. Michael's Villas. There was 8 of us and we were all musicians. My mum and dad didn't play, but they had a great love of music. But all of us played or danced, and we had our own kind of Hanrahan Kelly band. So we were always brought out to entertain the uncles and aunts and cousins. So the house was just full of music, like morning and night. And we were all clamouring to get our own space to play our bit of music. And it was a beautiful childhood. There were 8 very individual people, and it was a powerful, great upbringing. Yeah.
Is that amazing? It's also lovely to hear what a happy childhood it was. Where did you come in the 8, actually?
I was in the middle. The final two were twins. So I'm one of those middle children. Maybe we're the bridge in the middle of it all, I don't know.
It's interesting how you all were very musical and into music, although your parents, although they loved music, but they weren't actually doing music themselves.
No, and they were very much involved in the Cultus movement, which was very strong in communities, particularly places like Ennis, or in villages and that. And then we had the Flá Ceolls, and we would all enter the Flá Ceoll, and that was a great system where you got to meet all these musicians as well as kids. Mm-hmm. But my parents were always involved in committees and making sandwiches and doing whatever was needed. And then my dad also, he worked so many jobs to try and fend for the family. One of them was he worked in a local dance hall collecting tickets. So at a very early age, I got to see all these show bands, and I was completely besotted by it. The show bands and the stage and the whole razzmatazz. So I got to see all those bands as a very young child. I was affected very early in life about the whole stage bug.
Do you think that probably is what impacted you to go on and do things like Stockton Swing?
I think so. There's no doubt. Yeah. I mean, I was fascinated, and we'd get in to see the show bands rehearse and get photographs taken or collect photographs. And as I became a young teenager, I was going to the full gigs, and at 15 I discovered Horslips and bands of that, and Thin Lizzy, the original Thin Lizzy, they all came to play in town. I think it was because the house was just so full of music, and I was allowed to express myself musically. When I was about 12, I gave up the tin whistle because I was so brutal at it. And I tried to be a singer in a ballad singer, and I got second in some flair, and I gave that up. And then my older brother, Ger, who was the drummer, but he had a guitar, and I picked up the guitar, and that was it. I discovered Leonard Cohen shortly after that. So the ballads went out the back door, and I depressed the entire house then singing Leonard Cohen morning, noon and night.
When you look back now, do you just look back so fondly on that time because it became so big?
I'd been singing with Maura O'Connell. We had a duo called Tumbleweed, and we were having great fun singing kind of country, American country music. Emily O'Harris was out at the time, so we kind of besotted by her music. And then Stockton's Wing began in 77, and in 79 they asked me to join the band. And I did, and I went in as a songwriter, which was really cool. And then it just, everything changed.
Yeah.
Everything, yeah.
Did you become the most successful of the 8 children?
No.
They're probably listening now.
no, I think we all succeeded in our own lives. we were all very driven, the kids, all of us. And we, I mean, Kieran, my brother, was in Stockton's Wing, and he works here in RTÉ, and he does an awful lot of work with Tradfest.
He's a great guy.
Yeah. Mm. My sister Gade, she went and studied in her 30s, and she became a lecturer in UL, and you know, it was all these things that happened in our lives. We were all driven.
You all did so well. Your parents would be so happy. Anyway, and also the fact that you're all so close.
Yeah. We were given such a great start in life that has stood to us, really.
Yeah. So lovely to hear that. Are you all still alive?
Yep. Thankfully, we're all still alive, yeah.
God bless you all. Yeah. Good genes there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we have our elder lemon is Jaron. He's leading the head.
He's going to keep going.
He's keeping going. Once he's in good nick, we're all okay.
I love it. So, obviously, you became very interested then when your mom got this form of dementia. Mm. Tell me about that. You studied it a lot, didn't you? And you studied the brain.
During COVID, we went for one of these window visits, and I felt really frustrated outside the window because the care had great difficulty trying to translate, you know, from me through a muddied window. And I felt for all three of us, but I particularly felt for Mum, and she was at a good age, that stage, and I just wanted to wish her well for the rest of her family, or for the rest of her life. And so I had this image of her when I was going back in the car of a river, a stream that starts high in the mountain and moves down and nurtures as it goes along on its journey into the ocean. Mm-hmm. And that was the premise of the song then, that I was just wishing Mum well. Mm-hmm. To the end of her life. And it's a difficult thing with people with dementia when you get to a point when you're caring. And I've heard this from so many people, that you almost feel that guilt that you want your partner, your husband, your wife, your mum, your dad, you want them to kind of find their peace, you know, because at some stage in dementia, it becomes very difficult to communicate with people. We all go through that guilt thing. And I struggled with a couple of lines in the song, but I got it out, and then I brought the song to the Forget Me Nots Choir. Mm. Brendan Grace had been doing so much work with them and introduced
great
me to the
Brendan.
Choir.
Yeah.
Amazing guy.
Yeah.
Amazing. We did a concert in the Gaiety, I think, in Dublin, to celebrate Brendan's life. He had planned to do the gig anyway as part of this film he was doing with the Forget Me Nots, but we were invited to play with Stockton's Wing, and I met the choir master. Her grandmother was a great friend of my mum's, schoolmates.
Wow.
Very close. Mm. And she went off to live in Dublin, and I think they went to Australia and all that. But my mum and dad spent the first week of their honeymoon in her grandmother's house in Dublin.
Isn't that amazing?
So
you couldn't make it up.
You couldn't, no. So when we connected, and I sent her the song, and she loved it, and the choir loved it. And we recorded the song during COVID in Aldoc's studio. Was all like, you can go today, you can go tomorrow. But the choir couldn't move. So they recorded everything in their houses onto their phones, their laptops, with the help of their own family.
Yeah.
And then we got all the chorus together and brought it back to the studio and created this song, which is, the production is incredible by my pal Aldoc. And then we did a video and 55 or 60 of them turned up in Dollymount. Made a beautiful video. So that then set me up. I was hooked on the Forget Me Nots because they're such a gorgeous organisation.
Mm.
And Karen Meenan, who created the choir, suggested I should take it further. And so I decided to apply for a fellowship in Trinity College at the Global Brain Health Institute. That was a game changer.
Why?
I had that imposter syndrome in Trinity. Mm. What am I doing here with all these? I was very excited. But then I was in a room with neurologists, with a film director, app designer, neuroscientists, clinical psychologists. There was 14 of us from around the world, all over the world, in a room. And that's everything changed. And I started learning about the brain, learning about the different aspects of dementia, what goes on with dementia care in these days, and forging these incredible relationships. Even this week, Zach, my buddy, who was a film director, is in Ireland this week, sourcing places for a film he's created from the year we were together.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, so cool.
Tell us some of what you found out, I suppose, when you study the brain. I find the brain myself fascinating, though I know nothing about it. And what happens in a dementia brain? Like, tell me what you found.
Well, it basically is a build up of protein in the cells, and it comes from, it can come from different areas, come from lifestyle. And I'm not a scientist. I'm just a layman and picking up whatever I can. It can be lifestyle, it can be food, because the gut and the brain are so interlinked on how we feed. And also about our surroundings, how we communicate with people, loneliness, strokes, our blood pressure, high blood pressure. They're constantly looking for ways to explain why it happens. But it basically is, there's a few, as I said, there's a bit of short-circuiting going on in the brain.
Yeah.
But that's all it is. And I think that's the point we have to kind of get across. In the old days, if somebody was brain was not functioning properly, they were in their dotage or they're doting in the corner. Whereas the new science and the new thinking is that if we become more active, even in our dementia, mm-hmm. we can still prolong our life and make our life much more exciting.
Does that slow deterioration down? Like, you know, you always hear people saying, oh, play board games, Scrabble, crosswords, quizzes. I mean, are they useful or not? Or what can people do to maybe slow down a brain deterioration?
There's a lot of discussion about the crosswords and all that. But it's all about, as there's a great expression that Brian Lawler, professor, he's the guy that created GBHI. He has this great expression of it's a brain workout.
Yeah.
And he looks at it like you're saying, you keep your body fit, you keep your brain fit, it's a workout. And whether you sing a song, play an instrument, dance, you know, do a crossword, read a book, you're actually giving your brain a workout. And so the more workouts we give our brain, we get brain fit in a sense, in that sense. And,
yeah.
And that helps. It doesn't cure anything, but it certainly helps you get on with life. And so many people with dementia carry on with a really good life.
Yeah.
And they're treated. You're also treated with medicine, and then how the different medicines are working with each other. You check out your meds with whoever's looking after you. But most certainly, the aesthetics of art. You know, there's a great new movement called neuroaesthetics, and it's all about how we appreciate art. Like a visit to a museum is really good for people with dementia. Poetry is really great because of our association with words, and of course, music. We store all these memories up in the front of the brain. We're constantly spring cleaning our brain. And that's why we can remember all these old songs and old stories. We may not have much grasp of the instant memory, but our old memories are there. And when we access those, we're actually exercising our brain. So that's what the movement I'm involved in is, trying to promote more activity in that. What I love about it also is it's not just on a one-to-one from a carer to but it should be community-based. You know, we as a community, we need to understand more on how we can create a better environment for people with dementia, and most of all, their carers, because the carers go unnoticed in so many cases.
That's so true, and it's hard caring, isn't it?
There is a burden to care, even though some people say, oh, it's not a burden, but actually it is a burden at times, and there's nothing wrong with a burden.
Yeah.
I remember talking to some of the scientists in Trinity, and I talked about the burden of care, and someone jumped at me and says, there's no burden. We don't like that word. So I said to them, well, let's put burden into thesaurus and get... So we got 20 other words. I said, pick your word, whatever you want. And they all said the same thing. There's quite a lot of stress. There's fractures in families when they're caring for dementia. All these areas we need to kind of be honest about. And if we are, then we need to look at the environment we work in. I work with Age Friendly Ireland, who are,
amazing.
What the work they do in creating a better environment for people as we get older. I love working with them. I'm their ambassador in County Clare. But their initiatives are going right into small communities. Everybody's becoming more and more aware. So I think it's, dare I say, it is a good time to be in dementia. But it is because I think we're changing our attitudes.
Because you have a thing about stigma, don't you? You think, having done all your study on brain in this area, you want to change that. You think that's key.
Yes, I do. And stigma is in many forms, whether it's if you arrive at a hospital desk or a memory clinic, and if the setup isn't right, if the colours or the attitude of the people aren't right. As my friend Kevin Quaid, who lives with Lewy body, like if I'm going on a bus, it'd be nice to know that the person in the bus driver's, well, I don't know where I'm going sometimes. So, and need that
he's
help.
He's great, Kevin. You know,
yeah, he's fantastic. Yeah. There's us as people that were almost embarrassed about the people we care for because of the dementia. And I'm not talking about me, but I do me as the plural. They may do something inappropriate with certain dementias, like FTD can cause a lot of inappropriate behaviour. So what? You know, the people aren't deliberately doing these things, and we need to kind of accept. We just need to look at it, have a different focus on, and a different narrative on how we deal with it. And then you can go to the extreme. My friend Zach is back from, he did a film, I just saw it, the film director I worked with in Trinity, on the Congo, where they focus in on one of the women of the tribe who has dementia, and in some instances they treat them as witches, because they don't understand. And he has created this film about that as well. The stigma is everywhere, and it's not just with dementia, it's with a lot of illnesses. So we need to, I just think we need to be more, we need more conversation.
So where next?
This week I'm working with 8 people who have younger onset dementia, which is a really difficult condition, because it's people who are in their late 40s, 50s, early 60s, before retirement age. They're not regarded as a disability, which affects their access to care. Also, they have a young families, they have no pensions, so they're not in the older age bracket. Yeah. It's such a much more difficult a condition. My mum's generation, they had all of us, we were in our 40s, 50s, 60s, we were okay. But a younger onset has a wife or husband, they're trying to keep a job down. That's the area that I think needs more attention. And this week I'm working with 8 young people with younger onset dementia, and we're writing a song together.
Great.
And it's going to be amazing. And we had our first session during the week. It's so exciting. So there are areas where I want to work. And then the area that really excites me is virtual reality. I was lucky to be invited to Oxford to do a week's workshop last July. And what's happening with extended reality in medical care is phenomenal. In many ways, it's training the staff how to understand more what the sense of dementia is in a simulated session, and that will give them more empathy towards the people they're dealing with. They're trying to work on how they can get early markers through VR, how soon can we diagnose difficulty in the brain and do something about early intervention. And then there's all these areas of giving people with dementia virtual reality experiences. Somebody who likes to row a boat, when suddenly you're on a machine and you're out on a lake, and you see this, you see the reaction from people who are, it's just such, and it's a one to one. We're kind of used to having maybe somebody in the corner of a nursing home singing songs to everybody, or singing Frank Sinatra songs, but there might be somebody in the corner who wants AC/DC, you know. So they're moving more and more towards that one to one. My local library in Dún Laoghaire have VR sets, and we're going to try and develop that area.
Fantastic, Mike Hanron, not just a brilliant musician and singer, now advocate for dementia. So much you said there is so interesting, and thank you for being my guest. And we'll go out listening to a little bit of your wonderful song, Forget Me Not.
Oh, fantastic!
Remember the moments we shared. Remember the moments shared. So go set your sail.